I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit korin.com.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. We've been making cheese in Wisconsin since before we were even a state, which may be one reason why we win so many awards for it. It's what happens when a whole state dreams in cheese. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
Hello, welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host and producer, Sherry Bayer, and it is Thursday, February 8th, 2024, and this is our 379th episode of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talent in the hospitality industry. This show will be broadcast next week. So today, I'm on location with two executive chefs at their world-renowned restaurant, New York City's Hell's Kitchen neighborhood, and I'll introduce them fully in a moment. First, as I do in every show, I will start out with my PR tip, and then later we will have my speed round game, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip the show off with my PR tip of the week. So today's tip is to be adaptable. Yes, have flexibility. And by this, I'm actually not referring to my yoga practice, although flexibility is good for that too. But I am talking about life and work in general, and our ability to adapt to situations, effectively handling adversity and challenges without it getting the best of us. Being able to adjust will not only help us become better problem solvers, but it will also allow us to gain more of an appreciation by others and provide new opportunities. So let's all be ready to adapt. It's a great quality to have for many reasons. That's my tip today. Okay, so as I mentioned, I'm excited to be on location with two guests, and they are Max Natmesning and Marco Prinz, the newly appointed executive chefs at world-renowned restaurant Chef's Table at Brooklyn Fair in New York City. Max and Marco previously worked together at Chef's Table earlier in their careers and now bring their deep culinary experience and expertise from working in Michelin-starred restaurants around the world. Raised in Austria, Max most recently led the two Michelin-starred restaurant Alois in Munich, where he was also named one of Germany's 50 best chefs, and prior worked at award-winning restaurants like Rotwand and Steirerec in Austria, The Nomad in New York, and L'Auberge de L'Aigle in France. Originally from Holland, Marco previously served as the executive chef at Ukiyo in New York, which was awarded a Michelin star under his tenure, and multiple three Michelin-starred restaurants in Europe, including Parkhoevel and Oud Sluis in the Netherlands and Zilt in Belgium. And without further ado, welcome to the show. I got a little thumbs up there with some pronunciation, which I'm very happy about. So I did okay?
Yes, very
good. Okay. Yeah. Amazing. Well, hi. I'm so excited to be here with you both.
Thank you. We are very, very happy you are here.
Yes. Well, and I had a wonderful dinner here about a month, 5 weeks ago, and it was fantastic. So We'll talk more about that later in the show, but let's jump a little into your backgrounds, because I always like to find out how chefs got into the industry and what led you to become a chef. So, Max, you want to start?
Yeah, let's do it.
So, tell me a bit about growing up and when did you know you wanted to be a chef?
So, I grew up in Austria, like 45 minutes southeast of Vienna. And I came from a doctor's family. My dad's a doctor, my grandfather was a doctor, my sister's a doctor. So in the beginning, I was always torn to my grandmother, who was an amazing cook, especially on Saturday and Sunday, she cooked for the whole family. And then got a little bit of feedback from my parents because they wanted that I go to school till I'm 18 to really, because they weren't sure if this whole chef thing was ideal for me, especially in my young age. But I was always very stubborn and I wanted to go into the kitchen. I always felt like when we ate out, my parents loved to eat out good on Saturdays. We went to a nice restaurant in Vienna or in the next town where I grew up. And I always was like, felt the energy coming out of the kitchen, felt the dishes, the sensory part was amazing. And I always felt drawn to that. So after 18, I still said, let's do it. I want to still go to the kitchen. And I went to Vienna 2 years to a tourism school where from 18 to 20, and in the middle of that, you can make a stage. And everybody went as a bartender or, I don't know, something random. And I picked the 2 Michelin star restaurant, the Auberge de Lille, which you mentioned before. And that really opened the door. And the chef was really showing me the French way of cooking. And still that day, I think about this one lobster dish he made, which was amazing. And after those 2-3 months, I went to Restaurant Steyrreich, which is also the 50 best. And Heinz Reitbauer told me, yeah, you can start in the kitchen, but don't expect too much because you don't have the culinary background. And I was like, let's do it. I'm super up for it. And 2 years there, I totally loved it. And there was always coming up this news popping up from Holland, from this amazing, talented chef with 3 Michelin stars, 20 points out of 20, Gomio. And I said, I have to go there. I have to check that out. In the beginning, I went there, worked for free for 3 months. And all the friends, all the cooks I worked with at Steyrreich said, yeah, you're going to be back in 2 years, in 2 weeks. And this made me even, the fire burning me more stronger. And I proved them wrong and I just stuck around there. And that's actually where I met Marco.
Oh.
So this is where our story began.
Good segue.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So, Marco, what led you to working there? Take us back a little bit.
I am from Holland, as you know. And I grew up in a small town in a region where all the produce glass houses are from. So we have amazing flowers there. Amazing vegetables, amazing produce. I'm a son of entrepreneurs. My mom and dad had their own company, so they were farmers, flower farmers. And I grew up on a farm, so we had our own chickens, you know, sheep, we had horses. We also grow our own vegetables. The neighbors had another vegetable. They trade. And I fell really in love with those flavors. They are like, you know, they're taking me back. Like, you can almost not find it anymore, those kind of flavors, you know, really local food style. And at that time, I always was cooking a little bit with my mom or paying attention to her. She was a very good cook. She used amazing products. And they were big foodies. They always went out together. Sometimes we also were joining. We went to great restaurants. And then I said to myself, I want to become a cook. Yeah. And at that time, there was my first, there's like, in the Netherlands, there's like the education. You go 1 day a week to school. And the rest of it, you find a location, a restaurant, where you learn how to cook. And this guy, he took me, you know, the owner of the restaurant, to Reims. It's the Champagne region where all the champagne is from in France. And it was such an amazing experience, an eye-opener for me. So we ate that day at lunch in a 2-star restaurant. We drank the whole day champagne. We went to the champagne houses. And I thought, like, wow, I love the energy that is here in the restaurant. I love, like, how they cook, how they present the food, how passionate about it. This guy, he really, you know, he taught me about the Michelin guide. He said, like, if you really want to become one of the best or a good chef, you need to start finding, you know, a spot to work in one of those restaurants. And that's, you know, how I started. And it was not easy. I'm talking about 20 years ago. And people lined up to work in those places. So, or even, you know, they hired four students and only 2 survived. So it was like, you know, it was tough. But, you know, I put my head down and did my job, and now I'm here. So I'm very proud of that. And also, like as Max already mentioned, I worked at restaurant Outslaus, where we met. At that time, there was like one of the hottest restaurants in Europe. It closed down because the chef owner, it just became too much because it was such a creative place at that time. You know, it had 20 points, Gomio, 3 Michelin stars. All the best chefs from the world traveled especially to that place because that chef, Sergio Herman, he was overflowing from creativity. It was very, you know, it was not easy. He made many hours there during the day, but the team effort we had there, and it was going to war together. Yeah. It really formed, you know, our mentality to do this kind of job on the highest level. And as I already mentioned, it closed down in 2013. I visited New York already on a city trip. I love the energy here, and I thought, like, I want to go 1 year to New York. And it was, I did that on a student visa, and I started here in the city at 11 Madison Park.
Oh, I missed that in the bio.
Yeah, but I don't mention it because I only worked there for 6 weeks.
Okay.
Because it was, like, not my, like, you know, I didn't like it that much, my opinion. They have an amazing, you know, quality of food. They have an amazing, you know, organization. But I was, like, always working in smaller restaurants. Familiar, like, you know, more, as I already mentioned before. And that made me, you know, apply for the job at the chef's table at that time in Brooklyn.
And around what year was that? Like 2013,
14? 2013, yeah. I started in chef's table in Brooklyn, in the old location.
Yeah, I dined there once. So I was looking back, it opened, I believe, in 2009.
Yeah.
And for people who are not familiar with it, it's in, and we're still right now, we're in a grocery store in the back. It was part of a grocery store called Brooklyn Fair in Brooklyn. And the time I went, it was still BYOB or BYOW, you know. So it was very early on. And I dine a lot solo. And I remember they wouldn't take solo diners at the time.
Yes,
so I went with a friend. And I had an exceptional experience. It was like 25, 26 little bites. And it was really wonderful, extraordinary. And I kind of savored that experience. And I hadn't been here, even though I knew the restaurant had moved to this location from Brooklyn to Manhattan. But I've, like, always had that experience. And now I have your experience of dining here, which I think is also so special, and it was, like, absolutely fabulous meal. So because you guys worked together in Europe, and then did you just coincidentally come across each other working at Brooklyn Fair? Or
no,
was that a plan
funny.
Where you, like, hey, why
we
don't you join me here?
We followed the restaurant already here. When we were working in the Netherlands, we were always talking about when big cities, the Michelin Guide came out. We remember till the day of yesterday that we were talking about the chef's table because they received 3 Michelin stars.
Yeah.
And it was so special because you could not find a lot on the internet. You know, you didn't really know what they did. It was like part of a grocery store, so it makes it very, you know, unique. And we already, like, mentioned it. And then, as I said, I moved to New York. And Max also, he moved to New York. I started at Daniel Hem, but I, you know, moved into the chef's table. I was working there for a year, and then it was very hard to get, you know, a spot under Cesar's team because it was such a small team. There were only Cesar and maybe 2-3 chefs.
Yeah, I remember it was exactly.
There were only also 18 seats,
yeah.
So it was a very small, intimate place, you know, very special. And then I remember there was a spot free, and I said, you know, because I knew Max, I have a guy really interested to work here. So that's also, like, how Max joined the team again. And then we worked for many, many years together, you know.
So I came to the city because we had a lot of stagiaires in Holland, and one of them was Austin Johnson from One White Street.
Oh,
yes,
I've dined at their downstairs, not the upstairs, but it was
amazing.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm meaning to go back.
Such a nice concept.
Yeah,
and he was the reason because he staged in Holland, and he was back in the day working at 11 Madison Park. He was like, he wanted to open the Nomad under Daniel Hume. And he told me, you want to join the team? And I said, well, I haven't heard about New York. I want to check it out. And then I went there, worked there for a year, met my lovely wife, who also works here now.
Yes,
and
I was happy to meet her the other night, too.
Exactly. And then Marco texted me and said, after a year, there's a spot for you at Brooklyn Fair. That was kind of how we met again. And then we just worked there. It was really, really special because it was so mythical and it was so... 3 stars, such a small counter, and it was the birthplace of chef's table fine dining, I would say, all around the world.
Yeah.
Because he modernized it.
Yeah. It's very, very unique, special. The fact it was in a grocery store, too.
Yeah.
It was a little kitschy, and in a part of Brooklyn that wasn't known for Michelin star restaurants.
Exactly.
So then after that, you both went back to Europe, and then we can fast forward a little to how you ended up coming back here now, because for people maybe not as familiar, Cesar Ramirez was the chef for these years we're talking about and is no longer the chef, and you guys came as the co-executive chefs to take over.
Yeah.
So take us back, but get us back to Manhattan.
So it was, we both got the call directly. We both were approached to do it together.
When you were back in Europe?
Yes. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what you mean, right?
Yes.
And then shortly before, and then he approached us and we were like, this is super smart.
Yeah.
We do it together. New York is very competitive. And especially if you have a future vision about this place and you do it together, it's just very safe. You know what I'm saying? Because it gives stability to the whole team, to the whole place, and we know each other for a long time. So it was a no-brainer. It was obviously an amazing opportunity, and we directly went for it.
Yeah. I think especially in 2024, it's, you know, getting way more normal to have two head chefs.
Yeah.
Especially for a place like this. People also expect we are always here. We are always here. Like, you know, it's very important to us, but like, there's always, you know, in life, things coming up, you know, and one can go there and the other one is still here. So
yeah, you can have a day off.
It, you know? Yeah. It's not that
maybe.
That, but, you know, and like, as you know, like the owner Mo Issa, he approached us and it's like, you know, still we are very grateful for that. You know, he gave us this opportunity, but it also makes it very easy because we know when, for such a long time, we worked under him, you know, for almost 5 years before. And, you know, that makes it always way more comfortable and way more easy.
Yes. So how do you work together as co-executive chefs?
So it comes super natural. Marco does his thing. I do my thing. And then we all meet up here and prepare everything for the dinner service.
Yeah.
And everything comes very natural. When we create new dishes, we brainstorm and we absolutely want to involve the team so they feel special, they feel incorporated in this very important moment of creating a new dish. And because I can learn from them, they can learn from us. We have all different, seen different things, you know, techniques, and it all comes very natural, to be honest.
Yes, and it's really a team effort. Without the team, like we are nothing. So we want to mention it as well, and it's not only the food, it's the whole experience of the restaurant. It's about the music, it's about the setting, it's about the plate that we use. It's about the amazing, you know, we have an amazing sommelier, Peter, amazing restaurant manager, Mike, who works already here for 9 years. So, and also like everybody stayed, the whole team, they stayed with the transition when we flying in from Europe and, you know, we took over. So it's for us very important that everybody is really a part of that team. You know, it makes them, the end of the day, also very proud. You know, we can learn from each other. Of course, we are, you know, at the end of the day, we are the one that's responsible. We are the chefs, but we really like, we take them into the story that we are creating.
Yeah, well, it was so beautifully orchestrated, I would say, dining at the chef's counter, which is most, I don't know, half the restaurant, most of the restaurant is around this beautiful open kitchen. And it was pretty amazing to watch you and your team work because you just kind of magically created one of the courses and then cleaned up. It was like almost like disappear, like it was a clean kitchen again. And then you kind of swooped in and like boom, 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 created a second course. And it was like a ballet almost. And it's kind of amazing how very quiet too, the communication, because I've way back in the day worked in kitchens and the culture was loud and, you know, a little chaotic. And this was not loud or chaotic.
Yeah.
It was really beautifully orchestrated. The food was exquisite. So but how do you define your menu now and compared maybe to what the original days of Brooklyn Fare, going back like 15 years ago, what Cesar was his menu? And how do you deal with customers or guest expectations? Is it a mix of like new customers and also people who maybe were familiar with the other place? So my questions are like, define your menu now, like how you would describe it and the expectations with guests coming in, how you're dealing with that.
We definitely like, we respect like this restaurant. I mean, we, you know, it's like a certain way how we do things here. like also how we taught, like the former chef says, he taught us different things, you know. We work with the best ingredients, you know, we have the most beautiful plate tour, most beautiful wine list, and that we definitely want to keep up. So we're also keeping that up. Yeah. We create the dishes together, also with the whole team. We work honestly very seasonable. You know, like we got a message today that the first white asparagus are coming out, and we get creative about that. You know, we're going to create a dish with that, or the moro mushrooms, or we change the proteins here and there when they are in season.
But very important is that you have to respect the past. Like, you have to respect the success story of this restaurant that 12 years, 3 Michelin stars, so you cannot directly, when we come, change the whole menu. We both, Marco especially, worked 5 years under Caesar. I worked 3 years under Caesar, which is a very, very long time. And there's not a lot of chefs who stuck around for that long of time. So all the dishes, of course, the spirit is still there. But the most important thing is that we have our own European DNA on the dishes,
yeah,
that you can really tell the difference. But the spirit needs to be preserved.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
otherwise, the core guest who come here, they would be kind of shocked a little bit,
yeah,
if you know what I'm saying. So we try to balance it out in that way. And most of the people, they love the food. We have the direct customer feedback. They love it. They love the atmosphere. They love the warmth, which is really important for us to transport via the front of the house. Everybody, like Marco said, they stuck around throughout the changes, and they're really proud to represent us. This really makes the whole experience very special.
Yeah, well, you're doing an outstanding job. It is a very special experience. And also your menu is a little more seafood driven,
yeah, yeah,
I believe,
yeah,
which
but that's also
I'm a seafood
where,
lover.
Where
so.
We're
yeah,
known for.
Yeah.
Like, we are known for the Japanese products. That didn't change. Like, we have a guy in Shuki Fish Market, and we are totally in contact with him. He chooses for us the best sea urchin, the best tuna, and the best mandai. Like, you know, I can keep going and going. But, for example, we also serve now turbo from the Netherlands. That's, like, really my heritage. It's the king of the sea, they call it there. It's super, super exclusive. Nobody that I know does it in the city. You know, they are super big, and it's such a nice, you know, privilege to work with such a beautiful product, you know, that we do here. And like, the feedback from our guests is like amazing about that. Like, you know, we are so happy also like to work in an open kitchen, you know, to have that kind of feedback, to have
yeah,
a little chat, you know, to talk to the guests.
Absolutely.
And desserts too, those are your dishes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
They were also wonderful and delicious.
Yeah, it should be refreshing.
Yeah,
it should
yeah,
be on the refreshing,
heavy,
refreshing
yeah,
side, especially
yeah,
when you have so many courses.
Yeah.
You don't want something heavy, so we really try to put the emphasis
yeah,
on something with citrus notes or pear sorbet
yeah,
or something which
yeah,
just brightens up the palate.
Now we make our black truffle ice cream. We serve it now because before we had a white truffle ice cream, but the season is over, so. And we made it from an amazing soy milk from Japan, you know, from a small farm. So that makes it also dairy-free. Less, you know, it's more refreshing, more light, and it goes very well in this tasting menu that we serve.
Yeah. Wow, yeah. I'm like, looking, where's the walk-in? No, so I'm sure you're making it fresh. Well, sounds fantastic. So let me ask you my question for my last guest. On episode 378, I had on another chef. His name is Angelo Sosa. He's the executive chef at Tia Carmen and Kambara, which are both at the JW Marriott Phoenix Desert Ridge Resort and Spa in Phoenix, Arizona. And I was there last weekend. I did this interview in person, which was really great. It was warm and sunny, warm-ish and sunny. Okay, so this is his question. Working in Michelin star restaurants, you're at the top of the food chain and having a unique restaurant like Brooklyn Fare with so much notoriety and known for your innovation as well. One of the biggest things in the business or in any restaurant is chasing consistency. Consistency is the hardest. How do you maintain consistency in your restaurant? And actually, I condensed that down a little bit,
mm-hmm,
but that's the gist of it. Consistency.
So it speaks again for the vision of Mo, contacting the both of us. The consistency just lies in our bond we created in Holland, so that the both of us are here. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the consistency is we know each other, the consistency is the team stayed on, and the consistency is just that we are here every day.
Yeah. And the consistency is that we have the privilege here with Mo that is supporting us endlessly,
yeah.
You know, the owner of this place, and that it's like really the biggest privilege we have, and that we are, you know, it's like a little gem for us. Like we buy and we get always the best product. As I already mentioned before, that is the DNA of this restaurant. We cannot change that. We will not change that. And also, like, our clientele, our guests, they expect that.
Yeah.
You know, they really expect that we serve them the best of the best. And that is, like, you know, that is such a privilege. And, like, that's for us, like, a dream coming true to work here. And that is, like, you know, that starts with our, you know, the vendors we work with. Like, they have to deliver. They have to deliver us the best product. And, like, for example, if we have something that is not to our liking, or like, you know, our Japanese guys, they are like very serious about it. They say like, okay, it's not good. We cannot sell this to you. Like we cannot, you know, provide this, you know, as the mindset, we won't serve it. I mean, you know, we won't serve you something, or we're going to do a hiccup, or we're going to change something like just to make it, you know, make it up. You know, that's not our style. That is like how the consistency, I think,
yeah,
works.
And right now you're open. It's only dinner.
Yes.
And will it always
yeah.
only be dinner? It's not,
yeah.
it feels like it's
yeah.
a dinner tasting menu place,
yeah.
Yes. not Sunday brunch, but
yeah. yes.
you never know.
No, we have only dinner, but we do two seatings. So,
yeah.
That's also like, it's basically like we are Europeans, you know, we always with European kitchens and there you do lunch and dinner, but here's a little bit different. You do like only dinner, but then you basically you put them together, the lunch and dinner. And also I like the style of New York, it's, you know, way more fast forward, you know. European style is more long on the table, sometimes 6 hours. And here it's, you know, 2.5 hours maximum. That's
yeah.
what I really appreciate about New York, that everything moves a little bit faster.
Well, yeah, it does move way faster. And I'm smiling because every time I'm in Europe, I don't know, when I was like solo dining in Paris and
yeah.
it's so lovely. But at the end of the meal, when there's nothing on the table, there's no water, and trying to get the check. And then once you get
yeah.
the check, trying to pay. I mean, it's lovely that you can just
yeah.
sit there
yes.
forever.
Yeah.
yeah.
But it's very different than
yeah,
here,
yeah.
where
it's
like we drop the check
yeah.
and like
yeah.
next
yeah.
seating, please.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so before we take a break, one more question for both of you. I have a new book out called Chef Wise, Life Lessons from Leading Chefs Around the World. And I want to know, tying to my book, like, what's your top advice for aspiring young cooks or people who might want to get into this industry?
Be patient and be committed to what you do.
Yeah. And put time into your craft and try to perfect the craft. And also
yeah.
try to put your head down, like Marco said before, when the times are rougher, this just forms your own hard character. And try to stick around at a place, try to work with the chef, try to see the dishes the chef changes over a period, not just a year, maybe 2-3 years, which is sadly getting less and less. And I think it's definitely going to form a better character as a young chef if you really, you should actually work at a longer time at a restaurant.
If you are dedicated to a certain place,
yeah.
you know, you can also grow in that particular place, you know, because hard work, it will pay off.
Yeah.
That is the most important thing. And if you are not patient, if you move around, say like I, of course the world is like, you know, it's very open now, everything with social media. When we started cooking, that was not there. There was no social media. So you really had to work somewhere to learn. You had to buy a book. A famous chef, and those were not cheap around that
yeah.
time, you know, you really had to save for it, or you had to go eat somewhere. Now times everything is open, everybody can see, there are no, you know, there are no secrets from anybody, but like, still, you know, it's not only about the cooking where you're going to learn that, you're going to see some service-wise, you're going to learn some standards, you know, you're going to shape yourself in that time, and that's not going to happen just in a few months. You never, you know, it takes time, so be patient, be dedicated. That's the most important advice I want to give.
Amazing. Yes, very true. Okay, so on that note, let's take a little break, and then we will come back. We'll play my speed round, talk some industry news. I have my solo dining experience and the final question. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Today's program is brought to you by Korin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant from French to Pan-Asian to American. And that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services, from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit Korin.com.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. There's a reason when you think of Wisconsin, you think cheese. Cheese is a huge part of Wisconsin's history and future. In Wisconsin, the state of cheese, the tradition of cheesemaking excellence began 180 years ago, before Wisconsin was recognized as a state. Immigrants traveled to settle in this lush green hills of Wisconsin, bringing their cheesemaking traditions with them. These storied skills combined with the freshest milk available created a cheesemaking culture that is uniquely Wisconsin. Wisconsin's 1,200 cheesemakers, many of whom are third and fourth generation, continue to pass on old world traditions while adopting modern innovations in cheesemaking craftsmanship. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host and producer, Sherry Bayer, and today my guests are Max Natmesning and Marco Prinz, the executive chefs at world-renowned restaurant Chef's Table at Brooklyn Fair. And it's time for my speed round game. So what this is I'm going to name a couple things, and you got to pick your preference, such as chocolate or vanilla. Okay. You get your choice.
That's fun.
Okay. Ready?
Yeah.
Here we go. Eat in at home or eat out at a restaurant?
Eat out at a restaurant.
Eat out, definitely.
Indoor dining or al fresco dining?
What's al fresco dining?
Dining outside.
Indoor.
Okay. That one, I've been doing my show now 10 years, which is crazy, but that question I added in during the pandemic because all of a sudden only choice for dining out, at least in Manhattan, was outdoors for a long time. So al fresco. Wine, beer, cocktail, mocktail, or champagne?
Champagne.
I love water.
Water. Yep. I love water too.
Yep.
Tasting menu or a la carte?
Tasting menu.
Small plates or large plates?
Small plates.
A lot of small plates.
And for people listening, just Marco tending to answer before Max, so you know who's saying what, but they'll get your voices. Okay, a communal table or chef's counter?
Chef's counter.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
To be honest, I don't have really an answer because we are Europeans, so.
Yeah.
But is it tipping? I say tipping as well.
Yeah, that's the one in my game that's always like, could be a whole show talking about.
Yeah, sure. Yes.
And it is more of a U.S.
conversation.
Okay, a few more. I think you've already answered this. Open kitchens or closed kitchens?
Open kitchen.
I thought so. Kind of answered this too, but cooking or living in Europe or in the U.S.?
In the U.S.,
absolutely.
Love it. Cheese plate or dessert?
Dessert.
Manhattan or Brooklyn is the last one.
Manhattan.
Ta-da! It's the game.
Thank you.
Well, you guys definitely have a lot of similar answers there. So,
see. Good partners.
Yes, yes.
Absolutely.
Okay, so for industry news, I picked out an article on the Michelin Guide that just came out a couple days ago, and it's entitled "A New Three-Star Restaurant in the Michelin Guide, Great Britain and Ireland." from great value bib gourmands to Michelin stars, sustainable green stars to special awards. Discover all the new awards presented at the Michelin Guide ceremony. And this is on the 5th of February.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I thought, having worked in so many Michelin star restaurants, being from Europe, this would be fun to talk with you guys a bit about. I think the big news or headliner here is that the Ledbury in London now has three Michelin stars. It's the 9th of the 3 Michelin was added to the list, which I think is a big deal. I've never dined there. It's always been on my list, and it's still on my list. Mm-hmm. So have you been there before?
Sadly, no. But I know somebody who worked there.
Yeah.
Well, that counts. Yeah. Well, you all need to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
Happy for them. I mean, looking at the 3-star restaurants on the list, also Core by Claire Smith is on it, and I recently dined there. She's in my book, and I went for lunch, and that was fantastic. I saw the Enclume in Cartmel, that Simon Rogan's place, and he's also in my book, and he's up at the 3 stars.
She's an amazing chef. I did an internship at restaurant Gordon Ramsay, Royal Hospitality Road, a very long time ago, and she was, at that time, she was the head chef. That's
okay.
How I know her. They offered me a job there, but I took another job. I went to a restaurant at Sylton in Belgium, and also has 3 Michelin stars in Antwerp.
Yeah.
So, but it was an amazing experience. It was only for like a week, but she's so driven. She's such a perfectionist. It's like, and also like, I love it that like, more women, they're also getting into the kitchen and then the recognition that is very important, I think.
100%. This Claire Smith. It was, she's all of that.
She's super talented.
She's
really, I didn't eat it yet, but I would love to visit the restaurant.
Me too.
It was really lovely. From start to finish, you feel very at home. So, question for you guys, like how important are Michelin stars, even like today? Like, is it something that is always on your mind that you're going for? Or is it more you just do the work and if you're recognized, you're happy?
To be very honest, it's more the second part what you said. It's more about giving the people who decide to dine with us the whole package, the same with your experience, the warmth, the feeling like at home, the very high standard of good food, the hospitality, the all-around package, whatever comes. That's what I think.
We are confident enough, and we are working so long on the highest level. I mean, almost our whole training, we work in 3 Michelin star level restaurants. So we are super confident in what we do. You know, we are working together as a team, and the whole team also around it. So, there's no doubt.
Yeah. I also wonder, I remember I talked to David Kinch on my show.
Amazing.
I dined there several
Delicious.
Years ago
too,
and I, wonderful, and I interviewed him about a year or so ago, but he was telling me about the change of customers coming in from when they went from 2 Michelin to 3, and like just all of a sudden you can get a reservation. I mean it's and also I think expectations going into restaurants like that must change for you. So
but we have the DNA of that expectation because we're working so long on that level. So, we have those expectations and we will deliver every day those kind of expectations. It's in our DNA and it's what we do.
Yeah. Especially Marco worked for 5 years for Caesar. I worked there for 3 years. And so we definitely know we worked so long for our sliders. It's just like always 3-star, 3-star, 3-star. But the DNA or the standard you deliver there, then it's almost in us. Incorporated,
and that is what you mentioned before. That you said like this play moves so beautiful and it's almost like a ballet, and that's like also because the team we have here, they have the same passion, they have the same standards, like same drive, and we discuss things like we are really working together. It's very important that you're not only coming for the food here, but you come for the total experience. You want to experience something like that, but you experience here, you want to remember that. We want to, people come here to celebrate, they have special occasions, and we want to make it unforgettable for them. That's our biggest mission.
Well, from my experience, you did and are doing that. So congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Really cool that you guys are chefing together and yeah. with your team and really, yeah, just even sitting here now, and it's not set up for service, but it's yeah. got a really warm, beautiful feel, you know, it's a nice office. It's yes. got a good glow, I guess yes. you'd say.
Yes.
Yeah, beautiful kitchen. Okay, so for anyone who wants to check out the full list, just Google Michelin Europe yes. and Ireland. And actually, I was in Ireland recently, and I went to one of the restaurants that was on the list, Chapter One by Michael Villanero. And that's 2 Michelin star. I had a great meal there. And in London, I was at Akoyi, which Jeremy channeled in my book, and yep. that was fantastic. So I'm trying to get through the list, but there's yeah. a lot of restaurants.
Yeah.
It's a very long list.
Oh, yeah.
So congratulations to everyone. Okay, so it's time for my solo dining experience. So this week, it's at Ember. Here's the rundown. The location, the Wekopa Casino Resort in Fort McDowell, Arizona. The concept, destination dining experience with the highest quality steaks and seafood prepared over wood-fired grills. The chef is Richard Pels. So why did I go? Well, as I mentioned, I was out in Phoenix staying at the JW Marriott Desert Ridge and doing my interview with Angelo, but the chef Richard is someone I worked with on PR back in 2006 and 2007 when he had a restaurant in New York City called Goblin Market, which was a small, fantastic restaurant in Soho. And I was newer in my PR career. It was a really wonderful restaurant to be working with, and Richard was and has always been a wonderful chef. So I saw he was out there and I reached out and he said he was going to be there. So I was like, let me check out your new spot. Because I actually hadn't seen him in 15 plus years. So that's why I went. And my experience, I got there, of course, got a big hug. And I had a really wonderful little tasting menu. He made some dishes for me and I was sat right by the open kitchen. Different than here. I mean, it's more of a steakhouse, like big, mm-hmm. big restaurant, but it has a really large open kitchen with a chef's pass counter nice. At the front.
Yeah,
and
nice.
And so I was right there. I could watch the kitchen. And it was just really special to be there. So what did I get? Well, they sent me out this fancy mocktail that had a bubble on top of a martini glass, which was great. It popped when it got to the table. I also had a ceviche he made, and that was delicious. There was a scallop blossom, love that, pan-seared lamb rack with a rice bean cake, I think it was called Taku Taku, and it had a lamb jus with it, and for dessert, it was an extravaganza, I guess you'd say. Richard and his pastry chef laid down paper on my table, he had worked at Alinea, so
okay.
a little reference
yeah.
to Alinea, and made art on my table that
very
was
nice.
Enough. Dessert that I think I could have shared with about 5 or 6 people. But I had my table of
yes.
art basically just like different truffles and different chocolates
yeah.
and different syrups all over
yeah.
the table. So it was super fun.
Sure.
So it was great. It was really special to be there. The ambiance, as I said, it's a casual but modern steakhouse. It's like brown and copper tones. Has a nice bar up front. And you do walk through a casino to get to it. The casino isn't as big as I was thinking. It was like going to Vegas all of a sudden. I was like, how am I going to find this restaurant? It's not that big, but it's a casino in Arizona. So my first for that. Okay, it's perfect for date night or dining with friends, I'd say. Interesting tidbit. So Richard regularly competes in Ironman triathlons, which is so impressive because it's swimming, biking, and a marathon. And he told me how many times he's done it, like a dozen times. It's crazy. Very
yeah.
impressive. Personal fun fact. So when I was working with Richard at Goblin Market, we got this really nice press placement in Daily Candy, which at the time was the hot newsletter that it was very hard to get placements or coverage in it. And I think it was the first time I had one of my clients in that newsletter, and it was a big deal. And the editor was Pavio Rosati, who's become a friend of mine, and she then founded Fathom, which is a travel website.
Mm-hmm.
And I've now written some articles on Fathom about solo dining and travel. So everything like ties together.
Yes.
But Daily Candy had a really good run, and anyone who's as old as I am in the industry, will know what I'm talking about. Also, when I was in Phoenix, I went to Lafa, which is where Digby Stridereier, the chef, and he's in my ChefWise book, and he's a chef from St. Croix, and he's now living in Phoenix. So I went by there. I saw him. He signed my book. I met his lovely partner, Avilia, and had a nice meal there. And across the way, it's in this historic heritage square, is Chris Bianco's original Pizzeria Bianco. So I also stopped by there. So those are my meals in Phoenix, aside from all the lovely meals I had with Angela Sosa, Tia Carmen, and Kabara. Okay, so the cost of my meal at Ember, it was comped as a guest. I'm very grateful. I did leave gratuity, and I'd say the average cost of the meal, it would be between $50 and $100. Okay, would I go back? Yes. Their website is wicopacasinoresort.com and Instagram at Richard Pelz, that's P-E-L-Z, and at Ember Wico Casino Resort. There you go.
Nice.
Dining in Phoenix.
Yeah, nice. Sounds like a very nice experience.
Yes.
It really was. It was a reunion. And I think sometimes there's people, and I'm sure you've had this, where you don't see them for a very long time, but you can immediately pick it back up.
Yeah,
and that's how it was with Richard. I mean, I literally hadn't seen him in like 15 years.
Yeah. We have a good many more people. He worked in the restaurant in the Netherlands, Oud-Sluis, and he was so driven, so many hours, you know. It was like going to war together. And I just been chosen last Monday by the Gomeo Guide in the Netherlands as the best Dutch chef abroad. So I got that award, and I saw some old, you know, colleagues over there, and it was like, if I saw them, you know, yesterday. I've seen him not for many years, but it's still the same jokes. It didn't change. You know, it was such a nice experience. And I know exactly what you're talking about before, you experienced in Arizona.
No, thank you. And congratulations.
Thank you.
And thank you, Richard. It was special, you know, and I love traveling, particularly for this reason of connecting and meeting people, really. It's wonderful to have a wonderful meal, and it was. He's a great chef, and it was fantastic. But it's the bonding, it's the friendships.
Absolutely, yes.
So, okay, so it's time for the final question. So my next guest is Andrew Zimmer. He's a four-time James Beard Award-winning TV personality, chef, and writer, and social justice advocate. Andrew's going to be down at the South Beach Wine and Food Festival coming up at the end of the month, which I'm going to. I've been to this festival many times. My hometown is Miami, so I tend to go to it. So I know we're going to be talking a little about South Beach, but we're also going to be talking about his fantastic career. I think I'm going to probably need a longer show with him. But Max and Marco, can you please ask a question for Andrew? It could be anything.
Not that good in questions, to be honest. Yeah. But maybe like how does Andrew Zimmerman's day look like from waking up in the morning to going to bed?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, I think that was in my notes somewhere to ask you, but I skipped over it. But that's, I will ask him, do you anything else, or you just want to stick it to one?
I think that's the daily life. Yes.
Yeah.
Just to get
I just want to know, like, a person like him, how he... what he's doing during the day.
Just the insight.
I'm going to find out, and I'm curious to know myself, because he's got a lot on his plate, so to speak.
Absolutely.
So, thank you. That's the show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Obviously, we met already before, but it's just, very comfortable talking to you and a privilege that you're here. Thank you so much.
No, thank you so much. I loved meeting you when I was here for dinner, and it was a really amazing experience, and it's wonderful to be back and learn about your careers. And
so
I wish you much success, and hope to come back and have your food
appreciate
again.
It.
And
thank you. Love to see you.
So thank you.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
My guests today have been Max Natmesnik and Marco Prinz, the newly appointed executive chefs at the world-renowned restaurant Chef's Table at Brooklyn Fair. You can follow them on social media. There's Max Natmesnik at Marco Prinz New York and at Chef's Table Brooklyn Fair. And their website is brooklynfair.com/chefs-table. So go to the website, you'll learn more about them. And you can follow me at Sherry Bayer at Bayer PR and at All Industry. My Facebook page is All in the Industry. My websites are BayerPublicRelations.com, SherryBayer.com, and AllInTheIndustry.com. All of our shows are archived at HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are also on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Check out my new book, Chefwise, Life Lessons from Leading Chefs Around the World by Fiden. It's available wherever books are sold. Thanks to my engineer today, Armin. Thanks again to Max and to Marco and to the entire team at Brooklyn Fair and to Nicole Scharf and Nina Hay from Mona Creative. I'm your host and producer, Sherry Bayer. I will be back with a new show next week. Hope you'll tune in then. And thank you as always for being part of All in the Industry. Bye. All in the Industry is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.